Today is one of the very rare experiences in the Gospels where we repeat exactly where we finished last week, and that was where Jesus went into the synagogue and he was saying, after reading the from the prophet Isaiah, he said, "This text, these words are being fulfilled even as you listen." So we continue on from where we left off last week. Jesus then sits down, as is the custom in the synagogue. The preacher, the talker, sits down. And then he starts to speak to them. Now, the people that he is speaking to in the synagogue in Nazareth, he would have known every one of them. And they would have known him, and that's why Luke uses the reference there. Surely this is the carpenter's son. They actually mention Joseph. But in Mark and Matthew's text, they talk about, they don't always mention Joseph's name. Just who Jesus was identified by what he did in his life. Sons followed their father's tradition, so they just referred to him as the carpenter's son, because he was a carpenter. By this stage, Luke tells us that Jesus is 30, but he's obviously been away, and he is now returning to start his ministry as a man. Now, I don't know if any of you have ever experienced being away from your home, the place where you grew up, and then years later you returned home. And quite often the experience is one where we see that things are the same, pretty much the same, but what's changed is myself. I, the individual, has changed. The best example I think that I could probably give you is that when I was ordained a deacon in 1984, I was appointed to Young in New South Wales. And then the next year I was ordained a priest and reappointed to Young, where I stayed for another 2 years. Then I went away on my postings and my time in the Navy as a chaplain, and eventually returned after 20-something years to be posted by the Archbishop, in his wisdom, to Young. And I can identify with the time away. Now, Jesus wasn't away 20 years, but he was certainly away, preparing himself. And he came back, I came back to Young, nothing had changed. The people were all sitting in the same pews. The only difference was that the cemetery was a little fuller over that 20 years. And it just reminds me of this. It was interesting from my point of view, because I'm not brilliant, I don't think, with names. I'm not brilliant with many things, but names, you know, it's a gift, I think, to be able to remember names. But when it came to handing out communion on my return after about 20 years, as the parish priest of Young, I was able to say to so many people, the body of Christ, by name. So the connection was there. So in a sense, I knew these people and they knew me. For Jesus, the difficulty was that these people that he knew, they would have been his relatives, most of them. The village of Nazareth, perhaps 300-500 people maximum. In their synagogue, they probably would not have been able to afford to have the full scroll of the Torah, which is read out in the synagogue, because it was such a small village. But anyway, the text was read. So they just knew each other. So they knew Jesus, but they had put him in their category or their box as the carpenter's son. So they knew him by what he did. Jesus then goes away for a while, and then he comes back with a new maturity. And they would have been looking at his thumbs, for example, to see whether they were black from hitting the hammer, because that's what happens with carpenters. And that may have all gone, because now what were signs of a carpenter's world was different for Jesus. And they observed that the words that came through his lips were gracious. That's the word that's used in the Greek translation, the original. They were gracious words. And that's why they tilted their head and probably scratched it, saying, "Well, what, who is this guy? Where's this come from? We know him. We have got him boxed and sorted. And all of a sudden, he's behaving this way." So at first, when they heard him speak, they were comfortable because he was gracious. And then they wanted him to perform a miracle. I think they actually wanted him to perform magic, not a miracle, because miracles require faith. But they wanted him to do something magical that they had heard about. And when he responded the way that he did, they tilted their head the other way, to the negative, saying, we actually don't like what we're hearing now, because he made them feel uncomfortable. He started to take them out of the box that they had him locked in, and he was starting to take them out of the box that they had locked themselves in, and that box was simply that they were special. They thought that they were the chosen people and they were special. Well, Jesus challenged them on two levels. Firstly, they were part of God's entire creation, which takes everybody, not just the Jews. Takes in everybody, no matter what the colour of your skin, what is your heritage, what is your gender, what is your age, your orientations, whatever. God does not discriminate. And Jesus was saying that. They did not like that because they were no longer special then. And then he was saying that the gift of God's reign, if that's the word that's used, the gift of God's reign, it's a better word than the word kingdom, to be honest, because to reign means to live in the here and now, to experience it now. The kingdom images in our mind something far away, and Jesus didn't want that. He wanted them to understand that all people are loved by God here and now. It has begun, and he was the living, breathing sign of that. That made them feel very uncomfortable because they weren't ready for that. And what do they end up doing? Of course, they reject him and they drive him out. Now, when we experience rejection in our life, we normally respond or we react. If you think about for the moment the times that you have experienced serious rejection, you didn't get the job you applied for, you didn't get the promotion that you applied for, somebody swiped left when you wanted them to swipe right. And those people who use that know what I'm talking about. I didn't get the appointment that I wanted. I put in for this parish and I didn't get it. That's not true here, by the way. I did put in for this parish. But when things don't go the way we want them to go, that was what their experience was. Now, it says at the end of the gospel that they took him to the hill, not just because they rejected him, they were going to kill him. So that's serious rejection. That comes from people who react. We are taught as Christians to respond, not to react. It's a great gift if we can do it, because it usually happens at a time of enormous pressure in our life, that particular incident. So I encourage you this morning, when things don't go the way that we would like them to go, try and respond. Of course, the ideal would be, as St. Paul says, to respond in love. Sometimes that love just isn't there because our eyes are too blurry or our heart is too broken with rejection. But that seed of love has been planted and it is there. We just have to nurture it in the right response and it will come forward. Our vision will clear, our hope will be restored, and we will realise that we're actually okay and that we are loved. And that's what Jesus was trying to say to these people who didn't want to hear it. I just say to you this morning, please don't be those people. Please be the people who do want to hear it, who do want to have a clear vision. That's why Jesus was able to escape on the brow of the cliff, because I think he blinded them with the truth. They looked at him and said, "We know you," but they didn't know him. And at that moment on the edge of the cliff, I think Jesus looked them right in the eyeball and said, "Don't forget, I know you and you and you. I know you really well." And they would have stood there with their mouth open like a fly trap. And it was at that time they were so shocked that they realised that he knew them. They thought they knew him, but he knew them dearly. And in their shock, I guess, he was able to just walk away. Because he was free at last to be himself. It must have been a wonderful moment for him. Free, free at last, as the line goes in the movie. For you, I pray this time of the year, as you begin the next phase of, or especially for the school year, I pray that you can experience the freedom of the children of God who know that they are loved. No matter what your history is, or our history is, just know that you are dearly, dearly loved. May you always have a clear vision. May your hope be restored in the destiny which is the eternal promise for you. And may God bless you and your ministry in whichever category people want to put you in. May you experience truly freedom.